Welcome to the CFG Talking About podcast. Today we're talking about charity leadership and leadership in general, where we'll explore what it takes to lead with impact and purpose. I'm Emma Abbott, and today we're diving into a topic that couldn't feel more relevant. With political leaders dominating the headlines, it's the perfect moment to reflect on what truly defines effective leadership. In this two-part episode, I'm joined by two incredible women who both bring a wealth of knowledge and experience to the table. I'd like to introduce Maggie Smith. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Darima.
So Maggie, you're an executive coach and facilitator and work alongside many different public, private and third sector organisations. You're a consultant and you're also a visiting lecturer with the Centre for Charity Effectiveness at Bayes Business School. You lead a number of leadership programmes and your consultancy work involves coaching individuals undertaking leadership development and culture change work. And alongside Judith Miller, you run CFG's flagship course called Inspiring Financial Leadership. So our second guest is Judith Miller. Judith is partner at Sayre Vincent, where she's responsible for managing a portfolio of audit clients and leading on HR issues. Judith, I know that you advise on governance and risk issues, and you work with boards and committees, and you've also been a trustee yourself, so you know what it's like to be a charity leader. Welcome, Judith. It's really good to have you here.
Thanks, Emma, for that introduction.
Really, really good to see you both. I'm delighted you can join us today. You've both worked with and trained dozens of great and aspiring leaders. Tell me a bit more about where your own journeys began in leadership development and who inspired you. Judith, if you want to kick off.
Thanks, Emma. I think that's a great question. I think development's always been part of my DNA. It's hard to track exactly when the leadership piece came in. I think it's very much to do with my upbringing. I guess the school environment I was in, the encouragement of my mum and dad, and this desire for sort of constant improvement and just being curious and learning new things and new skills. So I think it's always been there. And then inevitably that sort of professional journey you take, particularly qualifying as a chartered accountant, that requirement for continuing professional education and development is always there, of course. And I think once I'd got through my professional exams pretty quickly, you realise, okay, I can do double entry bookkeeping, I can read a set of accounts, I can do a budget, I can do all of that. But actually the secret ingredient, if you like, really, is how you engage with other people. And that's really when the interest developed in terms of those personal skills. Came in, personal effectiveness, and then really the managerial piece, and then ultimately the leadership piece. And I really engaged in the leadership development piece when Kate Sayer, who originally set up IFL with CFG and Bayes Centre for Charity Effectiveness, she kicked it off, and then I was lucky enough to take over the baton from her. And inevitably, leadership is something important to me in the partnership here at Sayre Vincent. I have to be good at it. I have to be constantly thinking about it because we've got a big team. So there's leadership involved in every aspect of life, really.
Just give me a picture, Judith, of the team that you're leading at the moment.
It's very collaborative here at Sayre Vincent. We're a firm of seven partners, so we work alongside each other, and we've got a fantastic COO and operations team. But you know, we're well over 100 people. We've grown a lot in recent years, certainly since I started at the firm. I hesitate to say about a quarter of a century ago now. But quite a diverse team, but of course a lot of people who are at the start of their career as well, training to be chartered accountants. So for me, it's about inspiring them not only to engage in the qualification and commit to working alongside our clients, but also encouraging people to see themselves on a journey of lifelong learning. And part of what we do here at Sayre Vincent is we want to create finance leaders of the future, so that we'd love it if people stayed with us, and of course some do, but to create leaders who can go out into the sector and lead within charities. And we've got many now who are in senior positions across the charity sector, and I'm very proud of the audit work we do, of course, but I think the thing I'm most proud of is our team, the team present and past, and all of our alumni and where they are now.
Thanks, Judith. It often occurs to me that one of the privileges of being in a leadership or management role is that you're able to help others to grow and become really good leaders too.
Absolutely.
Maggie, where did your journey begin?
Similarly to Judith, when we talk about leadership all the time, but recognising those really early influences, and of course we weren't calling it leadership then, but with hindsight, that great thing, we can see those leadership behaviours still stand out now because of the impact they had on us, because of how it made us feel or what has stayed with us. But I think where I first got properly aware of leadership was when I joined the Industrial Society, which became the Work Foundation. And that was a campaigning organisation. Its strapline was campaigning to improve working life. And it was a learning organisation, research, consultancy and advocacy. So pulling the three strands together to try and make a difference. And what I realised when I joined there was that leadership and indeed coaching were a thing. I hadn't, I'd my grown up working life. I actually grew up in a chemist shop, so I started working for as soon as I could see over the counter. But my grown up working life was in hotel management, and being able to reflect back on what either I'd done or I'd seen other people do in that situation and be able to label it was really useful. And I see that happen a lot on our programmes, that if it's people's first bit of leadership development, they often talk about, oh, it's reinforcing. And I think sometimes we undervalue that. Being able to label something means that we can get better at it and we can grow it. And just that bit of reassurance that we're on the right track is often something that is really helpful around leadership. But I think and it was probably about the same time as joining the Industrial Society, what got me doing what I do now was sitting in the audience chair, in the participants chair, and hearing people bring either their stories or their wisdom or a bit of research or a book they'd written, and little light bulbs going off for me. And I found that just so helpful and inspiring, genuinely inspiring and exciting, that I thought, well, after a good while, I thought, I want to do that for the people. This stuff that helps make our working lives easier shouldn't be a secret. So it's not, it's not about me. It's about the stuff. It's about the work and sharing that. So that's what got me to here, I suppose. And IFL, the Inspiring Financial Leadership Programme, is a big part of that. We've done it, we can never quite remember how many years, but over 10. And it's something that I look forward to each year. I get to work with Judith now. And it's got its sister programme, Outstanding Leadership, which is for general leaders in the sector. And I do other programmes across different sectors. But IFL's definitely got a special part of my heart.
It's lovely to hear that the IFL course is still so close to your heart after all this time. And it's going from strength to strength, I know. Quite phenomenal, and a testament to how well you and its founders have brought the leadership development in charity finance alive. Sticking with the theme of your early careers, what were your lessons learned early on about great leadership? Maggie, if you want to tackle that question first.
Well, when we were thinking about this the other day, it was snowing. It made me realise this idea of our leadership influences going right back to childhood. I thought, what is it about me and snow that no matter how deep it is, I think, oh, well, I'll stick on my snow boots and I'll just walk, I'll get there. And part of it is absolutely mum and dad and that very Northwest attitude of crack on. But I really remember our head teacher at school. And he walked 6 miles to open the school on a snow day. And I grew up in Blackpool, so it hardly ever snows. I think it snowed 3 times throughout my childhood. But it really, I think, impressed me, actually, that he took the responsibility for his school importantly enough to walk across 6 miles of wild coast to open the school. And it wasn't really what you might expect from him. He wasn't a big character. I think he was probably quite shy. He was quite a quiet man. So for him to do that really, really stuck with me. So, it's these little instances that we see all throughout life. I think in terms of doing what I do, it was a colleague, Kate. We also had a colleague, Ian Lawson, who worked in leadership development for many years, sadly passed away now. And it's Ian's fault, basically, that I do what I do, because he did that thing that good leaders do of spotting the special quality that people have got around leadership. And the number of people who said to me after he died, oh, he really took me under his wing and encouraged me. And then I said, yes, and then he pushed you off the branch, didn't he? And that was largely why I do this, was because I'd got somebody like Ian behind me. And there've been other people in my working life who've seen what I hadn't seen yet. And their encouragement, their belief, is what pushed me out of my comfort zone to do it.
That's a lovely story and lovely memories there of Ian. And Judith, you'll have memories of Ian too, I'm very sure. What have been sort of your main inspirations?
It's interesting, I master actually as well, but the same type of example has appeared earlier in my life as well. And I think my headmaster, funnily enough, was quite a quiet man, but he was very present. That's how I would describe him. He was visible, always visible. He would be walking up and down the corridors. He would be at all of the assemblies. And I think there was something about the presence that he had. He was quietly leading the school. And the other thing that I felt about him was his sense of connection. You know, there are over 1,000 pupils and he genuinely knew all our names. And I've always taken that away. You know, he was humble, he was connected, and he was visible and present. And I think those are the key things I took from that. And that sense of connection with other people and how you create it, I think, is so important. There's a quote that Maggie and I both love, and I'm sure people who are listening to it probably will have heard it. It's the Maya Angelou quote. People will, I'm not going to get it right now, but they'll forget what you said, but they won't forget how you made them feel. And I think that's really important thing for leaders to think about, especially at the moment.
Yes, that quote by Maya Angelou is just brilliant, isn't it? And you've both mentioned a number of leadership traits already, and they're not always the obvious ones, are they? You mentioned humility and being humble and being present enough to connect and having that personal touch, as well as helping others to grow and develop. What other attributes or behaviours do you try and instill in others or develop?
There's something about always being curious that comes back to the learning piece. But I think there's something that's important about leadership is reassuring people that you don't need to know the answers to everything. And it's surrounding you with diversity and other people who will know the answers. You know, you're not there to be this perfect human being, the fount of all knowledge. I think also going back to that point about being humble, you know, it's okay to ask for help and you should be seen to ask for it and ask for it from time to time. Being prepared to say you got something wrong, admitting you've made a mistake. And sometimes, whilst I think sometimes this needs to be carefully managed, admitting you don't know. I mean, obviously, you've got to manage the potential impact of that, you know, creating a bit of anxiety. But in certain circumstances, then I think that's appropriate. And I think that's all part of trying to create some psychological safety around you and giving people permission to raise issues and feel vulnerable as well. And it's taking, I think I've mentioned mistakes, but learning from mistakes and growth from mistakes, not looking for blame, but people don't come to work to do a bad job, but we all get things wrong sometimes, we all have bad days. So I think having that perspective on things really, really, really important.
Maggie, what would you add to that list?
I think obviously I'm going to agree with Judith, but also I really strongly believe that what she said are the attributes. They absolutely came through in the research that the Work Foundation conducted some years ago, the Exceeding Expectation research, which is the outstanding leadership research that we talk about. It's the human in the leader connecting with the human in front of them, whether it's someone they manage or whatever the working relationship is. I think we also talk a lot about leadership in not being about the role. We've all got experience of seeing really excellent leadership behaviours happening at all levels in organisations. Often the people I describe as the corporate glue people, the people who you turn to or whose opinion you value. So leadership is absolutely not attached to role. We hope those in the senior roles will be good leaders or exhibit good leadership practice. But we know it's hard to do and it doesn't always match. But yeah, all of those listening, being visible, being genuinely interested in people, what makes them tick, how they're doing, not just for them as humans and being well, but in terms of how we can do the best we can, how we can make things better. If we're not having those conversations, we're missing all of that. We're missing all of that promise and all of that engagement and good ideas that people have at work. I think one of the other things that really struck me, I remember a boss of mine, we're having some organisational change at an organisation I worked in, quite big change. And I know that he, because we knew him well, I knew he didn't personally completely agree with it, but his role was to play his part in bringing about that organisational change as a director. And he didn't spin and he didn't be untrue to himself, but he managed to toe the line in a way that made the rest of us be able to get on board with it. And I remember being really impressed by that, by him being able to find that in his leadership, that he could turn up as a leader rather than him as himself and be grumbling away. You know, the conversations you hear when people say, oh, they want us to do this. Sometimes you hear that at quite senior levels, and it's, no, you are they. To the rest of the organisation, you are they. That's not okay. And I think that's a hard thing to do well and to do authentically. And you know it when you see it, is often the case with good leadership, I think.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Maggie. We've seen such huge change, haven't we, in the way that we work today. And these days, it feels like leaders have to be even more resilient and adaptable. Are there any other skills that are important now that perhaps didn't feel so important maybe 10, 20, even 30 years ago?
I think that's right, Emma. I think it's been a slow change that has been speeded up by events in recent years. I don't just mean COVID, other stuff as well. But again, when we go back to that research that was over 10 years ago now, it was this human quality, the connection with others. And when I think about what leadership's going to be needed in the future, it's what can't be systemized. It's what is the human in the workings of whatever organization it is. The exceeding expectation research followed on some study before that called Cracking the Performance Code that looked at high performing organizations to try and see what did they have in common, what could we learn. And one of the elements was around leadership, and particularly around the nature of being fleet of foot and being able to be adaptable and flexible. And that absolutely is something we talk a lot about on our leadership programs. Think back to the COVID years. Oh my goodness, did we not have to be fleet of foot and flexible and adaptable? And for the most part, we were. And also we had to do it for much longer than we anticipated, and arguably still are. I think that being able to be comfortable with being on uncertain ground is going to be one of the most important attributes that we're going to need to draw on our leadership. And it's not especially new. You listen to Daniel Goleman's work from, again, 20 odd years ago around emotional intelligence. He talks about this, about adaptability, about flexibility. The more that we can master different approaches rather than a one size fits all approach, the more robust and resilient we're going to be personally and also in our leadership and support of others.
Yes, another good point, Maggie. What else have you observed about the world of work?
I do worry about young people coming through, the pendulum still swinging between what the world of work looks like, I think, whether it's at home in the office or hybrid, and what that is. So I think that's still, I think we're shaping that. And I think that's one of the current struggles of leadership, is we're part of forming this chapter in a way that we maybe haven't been before. I think we're seeing a little bit of a rise of some perhaps what we might call old or traditional behaviours as a response to the changes that have come in the last 10, 20 years. You know, we don't just see it in work, do we? But I think there's always that if people are speaking out, probably something good is in there. We could take heart, those of us who are concerned about inclusivity or diversity in the workplace. I really believe we are still moving in the right direction. The pace of change, of course, isn't what we would want it to be. But my mum was born in the year that women got the vote. So if you think about it generationally, change is absolutely happening. Yeah.
Judith, how positive are you feeling about progress?
I do feel positive about the sense of direction. And I remember my mum passed away quite a long time ago, but she was really talented. And the biggest sadness that I think I had about her work-life experiences was that as soon as she had my sister and I, she had to give up work because the workplace where she had her working life up to that point didn't accept married women with kids. And so the opportunities that I've been afforded in my work life are so different. That expectation that you give up work at the point you have kids, I mean, just appalling. So I am optimistic. I'm saddened hugely by what's happening in the external environment. But absolutely, it's about, let's think about what we can control and influence. And it's about bringing the diversity into our organisations and looking at where it can add value and what do we need, and focusing on bringing that in.
What's the best way to begin with that, Judith?
I think it's about sitting at the table and looking at what you're missing. I think we've got to move away from it being performative. It's got to be real and genuine. And it is looking at, you know, the skills and experiences that you're missing around the table. And I think we have to come back to the environment that we're operating in day to day and how we can influence that. And you know what? There's another thing that I've been thinking about. We that I think links to that, the qualities of leaders and what leaders need to be about, is if you are looking at the equality, diversity and inclusion agenda, I think there's a really important word that I would add to that, which is the word belonging. You know, you can have all the great policies you may want. It might be in paper, but people need to feel like they belong. And that comes back to the agenda of the leaders being connected. So belonging is a big thing for me.
Maggie, you look like you have some thoughts on that too.
And I was just reflecting on what Judith was saying there about belonging. As soon as we create a group where there's a feeling of belonging, there will be some people excluded from that. And that, you know, so much of leadership and challenges around leadership about the unintended consequences. So I think staying with that, Judith mentioned before, curiosity of what are we missing? What will be if we do this? What will be the impact of that? Not just the impact that we can clearly see and imagine, but what will we be missing? What if we could spin around 360, what else will there be?
Yes, absolutely. The phrase that comes to mind there, be curious, not judgmental, which I think fans of the TV show Ted Lasso will be very familiar with. And I love that phrase. Judith, what are your final thoughts on that one?
One thing that I can think of at the moment that I'd add to the point about what do leaders need to be doing now is I think there is a need to bring some positivity to life. And I don't mean that in a false sense at all. But I think there is a challenge with, you know, the external environment and also just the agendas that people have got. They've got a lot to do. A lot of people are overwhelmed. But, you know, it's this point about emotional contagion within organisations. And I think the leader has a job to play in influencing and regulating that. We've got this lovely expression that we use on the Inspiring Financial Leadership course, or can you be somebody's rainbow, or are you going to be a mood hoover, you know? And I don't mean that falsely. I think it's incredibly important. I just another example. Recently, I privileged enough to go to so many board meetings as an auditor and as an organisation going through challenging times. And the chair was extremely calm and said, look, we'll get through this. We've got a tremendous reputation. We are handling the situation we're in incredibly well. This will get us through and we're going to keep going. And it was just a calm and measured approach and a positive one. And I think people responded well to it. So I think that's really a calmness in the face of uncertainty, really important.
Yes, that's a real skill, isn't it? Being calm under pressure and sharing that positivity and hope with others in a way that's genuine. We've heard a lot about well-being and putting on your own oxygen mask in the past few years. How crucial is that for charity leaders now?
I think what's happened over the last 5 years is we're all more aware of what we need to do to look after ourselves and to be resilient. But I think the reality is it's blooming hard to put it into practice. And I think that's the thing we try to address, is how you do it. And I think the themes that we're all a lot more aware of than we ever used to be aware of is just the power of habit, small incremental habits. We teach a lot of tools on the Inspiring Financial Leadership course, and it's about habitualizing them and, you know, putting them into practice. And you know, you've got to work hard at these, but starting off small, and it's as relevant to your leadership when you're showing up at work as it is to putting your own oxygen mask on, for want of a better word, and dealing with your own resilience. And I think there's also something for leaders to do around being prepared to be vulnerable as well, and to admit some of the challenges you have with your own resilience. We have done something here at St. Vincent. We put in place mental health first aiders a couple of years ago. And one of the most powerful things was when the group of us who are mental health first aiders were prepared to talk about to each other, I have to say, our own challenges in those areas. And so admitting to your own vulnerabilities has a powerful message, and it's demonstrating that you as a leader are a human being.
Maggie, any final thoughts on that point or any others?
Yeah, we've got a whole session on that as well, haven't we? I think I like to hope we're away from the superhero leader approach of pile it on, I can cope. But evidence to the contrary is before our eyes, isn't it? I think one of the reasons is we get it, we understand conceptually, it's not hard. A lot of leadership stuff's not hard to understand. We use the phrase simple, not easy. We get it, we don't do it. And I talk about this stuff day in, day out. So I do get it. And I think about community, that's where it can help. You know, you think, if I've said I'm going to walk every day, me alone in my head, there's lots of days where I won't do it. But as soon as there's somebody alongside, oh, come on, it won't take long. We'll feel better when we do. Sometimes just that egging on, or knowing that, oh, I'm going to see you tomorrow and I need not to be saying, no, I didn't walk. How embarrassing. So honestly, whatever it takes to get us doing it, not in a way that it becomes another stick with which we beat ourselves. We hear that phrase a lot. And as soon as we're using that phrase, my advice is, well, stop that, because that's not helpful. And it very much stems from self-compassion. It has to start with self-compassion, because if you're not showing self-compassion for yourself, you can't begin to practice compassion well. It's absolutely a non-negotiable for most of leadership, and certainly leadership when we need to be at our most compassionate, we need to be at our best. And, you know, when I ask rooms of people, when were you last at your best? Very rarely can people tell me. It was that long ago that it's lost in the mists of time. Both Judith and I support the, what's the word I'm looking for, tools, I suppose, put forward by positive psychology. Don't dwell in the problem and don't get Pollyanna. Be real. Do what you can. And as I would say, as a leader, it happened just the other day with a group. I just got the feeling they weren't okay. There was something. They weren't themselves. So I asked. And I'm just, and I said exactly that. I'm just getting that. What is it? There was about 12 of them. Virtually every person in there was in that state. So when you feel it, ask, as Judith said. And we all got up and just did a big breathing exhalation and rolled our shoulders out of our ears and down our backs. So yeah, I'd say maybe that's my takeaway. If you get a little whisper from your gut, trust it. It doesn't often set you wrong.
I think that's a great note to end on. My takeaways are: be human, be real, trust your instincts, look after yourselves and others. If that's not what great leadership looks like in 2025, I don't know what does. So thank you very, very much, Maggie and Judith. What a great conversation with so much food for thought. So thank you, Maggie.
And, thanks so much. Lift it.
Thank you, Judith.
No, really appreciated having this time together. You've made me think as well this afternoon.
Are you happy to join us again to talk about leadership in charity finance?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.